Good morning. Welcome to Talk Around Town. The following program is a production of KHNS. Its content does not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of the Board of Directors or Lynn Cannell Broadcasting Incorporated, the licensee. I'm Joanne Ross Cunningham, and today we will have News of the Week with Tom Morfitt, checking in with Al Badgley this time, talking about moose hunting. And we'll have a surprise guest today, someone who's traveled across the ocean to be here. And our talking topic today is about the recall. Our guest today will be the author of the petition for recall, the two borough assembly members on that petition to be recalled, and also the treasurer for the Haines Voters Against the Recall. Okay, up next is Tom Morfitt. And Tom, we're in a little studio here, and it's a little bit different because they're putting in the new soundboard, but there you are, ready to go. Thank you.
Great. Thanks, Joanne. Great to have you here. Great to be here. I can't hear myself today, but I guess we'll work through that.
You know what? I'm not hearing you well either. Try a different microphone.
Different mic, maybe.
We can hear you fine.
Okay. All righty. We're on. Apparently we're on. Good. Thanks,
Steve.
I can
hear you in my headphones. Okay.
It's a big week in the Chilkat Valley. Joanne, as you well know, we have the mother of all elections coming up Tuesday. Between the three seats up for grabs on the assembly and the recall effort aimed at two assembly members, we have five of six assembly seats in play. Up for grabs, and also three school board seats, as many as three school board seats, and I'll explain that in a little bit. But anyway, so 9 of 14 elected positions to the borough government are up in this election. It's almost unprecedented. The one school board seat that I said up to three school board seats, we have one undeclared seat on the school board, and potentially, if a write-in candidate for that seat garners 40% of all the votes cast, that seat could be filled. Otherwise, it goes to appointment by the school board. But big election. Anyway, you can read a lot about that, and you're going to be hearing a lot about that on the radio, so I don't want to dwell so much on that other than to tell people to go out and vote. The fascinating thing I want to talk about a little bit this week is this rec center, the question of what to do with the old school is, I guess, the issue. And if you just bear with me, I want to go through a little bit of history because it's fascinating. It's a crazy kind of little political dance that's happened here in the last couple of years. And hit the paper, we're kind of scratching our heads trying to figure it out. There's four parties, you might say, that are involved here. The borough, the advocates for a rec center, skeptics, or, folks have questioned whether they can afford it, and the architects. And back in February, the architect said rebuilding that elementary school is your cheapest option if you want a rec community center. 40% the cost of new construction. The the advocates for Rec Center said, Les Hostetler and some other folks said, this will work. This building will work. The borough at the time, and kind of the conservative skeptics, you know, said, how much is this going to cost? We're skeptical. We don't know. The borough said at that time, someone else has to do this battle. Well, and that was back in, say, February of 2010. This year, beginning of the year, the borough said, we're going to do our part. We're going to study it. We're going to see the potential users and the potential income and whatnot. We're going to study it. So fast forward till May of this year, the borough's scientific survey of community attitudes finds that 71% want the old gym to be turned into a new rec center. So a little bit more pressure on the borough. 3 months later, the borough has canceled the rec center study and has said, and the borough assembly says, we want to tear the thing down. The fitness center, people who had previously supported the idea of making the rec center or the old school rec center, said, I don't know if it's going to work. Meanwhile, the skeptics, the people back in February 2010 who said, how much is this going to cost, whatnot, some of these same folks are like, well, we could leave the building standing for some more study. The advocates of the rec center now say, no, we should tear the building down. So we've had a complete reversal, or at least a pretty big shift on the part of the folks who initially proposed that building for a rec center, it seems. The conservative element of the community that looking at costs is now looking at that building and saying, hey, can we do something with that? Two assembly candidates who were opponents, Norm Smith and Karen Hess this week, both expressed support for saving that building in some form. So it seems like there has been almost a tidal shift of positions between, kind of a traditional liberal view and a conservative view. Now with the rec center backers saying, no, tear the building down. The folks who were more conservative in their approach, concerned about the money, particularly of a rec center, saying, well, maybe we should look at maybe keeping this building open for a little while longer to see what we can do with it. And the Haynesboro Assembly saying, yes, or first, it's up to someone else. Second, we'll do the study. And then third, and then after getting support from the public, 71% of the public saying we want it to be rehabilitated into a rec and community center. In May, the borough 3 months later canceling its own studying, saying we're tearing the building down. Fascinating piece of local politics. What's happening there? We're still trying to figure out. It's reminiscent to me of in 1968, a candidate for president Richard Nixon saying that no one needs to worry about the Vietnam War because he had a secret plan for ending the Vietnam War. As far as we can tell, maybe someone has proposed a secret plan for building a new rec center. I don't know. But it's fascinating how opinions on this issue have shifted in less than 2 years.
Lovely. And so the latest is that the latest this week
was a vote last night by the assembly to award a contract to tear the building down. Roger Schnabel says he won't get around that for another 2 weeks. Stay tuned.
Stay tuned. All right. I have one little good piece of news for you, Tom. Tom Haywood has been named by the governor, awarded the State's Arts Council Arts Advocacy Award.
Oh, that is
and,
great.
Yeah, he just got that award yesterday, and his wife sent me a little email letting me know that.
Yeah. And speaking of awards, last week at the Chamber Banquet, there was an annual Chamber Awards, as much as we have of, in terms of community awards, really. And at the banquet, Olrud's was named the Business of the Year for their facade improvements. Hauser's won Customer Service. Christine Harder's Buckshot and Bobby Pins is the Rising Star Award, her new boutique there on Main Street, very lively. And Melissa Aronson, who works or volunteers about 30 hours a week for Haynes Fensbury Recycling, was named winner of the Community Service Award.
Well deserved all around.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Another quick plug I want to put in is there's a meeting coming up on the Thursday, a week from tonight. The state's coming in. They're revamping, first revamp since 2005, the Southeast Transportation Plan. One of the options is eliminate a lot of the ferry runs, including the ferry run to Bellingham, build more roads, including the Katsahin Road. It's quite a bit of interest about what's going to happen to the ferries in a time of declining government revenues, declining population in Southeast Alaska. Can we still afford the ferry system that we have? If people are interested, that's next Thursday night at the Assembly Chambers.
Assembly Chambers on the 6th of October.
6th of October.
I've heard that's a big meeting coming up. Tom, you do such a good job. Thank you for being
here. Thank you. Thank you very much. And I want to put one final plug in. Having a birthday party. It's my 50th birthday party at the Bamboo Complex there. And everyone's invited. That's next Wednesday night.
Next Wednesday night. Happy birthday.
Thank you.
Listening to Talk Around Town. I'm Joanne Ross Cunningham, and in the studio here with us is Al Badgley, Fireman Al Badgley, also Hunter Al Badgley. You have a child named Hunter.
We do.
All right. Hey, tell us what you've been up to.
Well, actually, I was one of the successful people on the hunt this year, so that's kind of a neat thing to do. And, you know, I'm just talk a little bit about hunting here, and especially for moose and Haines area. I mean, I'm not going to really get into the antler configuration. I'm going to kind of talk a little bit about what hunters, probably the three different types of hunters to start with. You've kind of got the weekend hunter that just kind of says, you know, I'm going to go drive down the road, and if I see a moose, I'm just going to, you know, they've got their gun and they've got their thing of sodas, and they're sitting there just kind of going to have a good time. And I mean, it's more of a just a pleasure trip. So, you know, those kind of people, periodically those guys get a moose, and, you know, more power to them. Then you've got the second group of people that are probably like the people that work, that are the weekend hunters. You know, they kind of get out there, they maybe do a little scouting ahead of time and start looking for moose, etc. And, you know, they're out 2 or 3 days, and they're out, you know, probably for the weekends, and, you know, they sometimes get moose also. But then there's the diehard. I mean, I got one story about this diehard person. It happened a long time ago. This guy knew of an area there was a moose in. He actually climbed a tree the day before season, tied himself into the tree, and slept in the tree all night because he was trying to get that moose in the rain. I mean, this is what you call the diehard hunter.
That is a catchy story.
So anyway, but one of the things about hunting that, you know, I mean, there's an obvious reason why people hunt. I mean, having a moose in the freezer is a, you know, it's a great way of supplementing the food diet. I mean, there's probably few people that will, you know, pass. If you had a moose steak or a beef steak, a lot of people would opt for that moose steak just because of the you know, less whatever they put in cows and stuff like that. You know, the natural amount of flavor in a moose steak right there. But what all else happens out there? I mean, some of the things that happen to me that are just kind of unique is the fact that getting up in the morning early and you go out into a stand, and it's like, you know, you're moose hunting, but you're also, you know, I was just some of the things that happened to me this year. You know, an owl is just hooting in the background. And then I'm sitting there and I listen overhead. There's a flock of geese flying over the top of me. And then trumpeter swans are out kind of making their noises in the background. And all of these different things. And these hawks are out looking for mice. And there's just a lot of things. And you see a sunrise come up. Oh, man, it's just pretty phenomenal for just being out there. Disregarding the fact that there's moose out there, you're just doing all the other things.
Mm-hmm.
So, and some of the things that are kind of important to me too are the fact that, I mean, some people are hunters that kind of stay in a stand or something. Some people kind of move around or something like that. But there's a lot of people that hunt a lot, use the call system. And one of the things that's, you know, I guess exhilarating for someone is you're sitting there and everything's nice and quiet, and you make this sound like a cow itself or a grunt or something like that, and all of a sudden, you know, up to maybe a quarter mile away, you'll hear a response. And it's, you know, it's kind of like, wow, this is neat. And then you'll hear them, and then they're in the brush, and it's all these challenging situations. You're trying to entice this animal out into an opening, and he's saying, I ain't coming out. And it's just a battle of wits between that. And then periodically, the moose wins. Periodically, the hunter wins. But it's always it's a nice, challenging story.
What's that call that you make?
What's the call? It's a cow call or a moose grunt. I don't know if you want to hear one.
Yeah, we do.
Okay. Well, hang on a second. Here's a little cow call. I don't know how to do it too loud into the speaker here. So anyway, and then there's a more of a grunt, and then there's kind of other kind of things that people do here. But a couple of things that are also kind of a challenging situation is walking to and from your stand or walking around. You know, you can be walking in an area, and then all of a sudden, there's a moose track in your track from yesterday. Ooh, I mean, talking about excitement. Then you're looking at the size of the track. Wow, that's a huge track. I mean, then you're looking at which way it's going. I'm saying, yeah, it's going to be going this way. And you're trying to do all this anticipating of what's, you know, where's this moose going to go? Is the moose going to be bedded down? What are they going to be doing? Oh, there's a cow. If you see a small track and a big track, you can probably anticipate it's a cow and a calf. And it's like, okay, well, you know, that's not what we're looking for, but where there's a cow, there might be a bull lurking in the background. So you just, you know, it's just always kind of a neat thing. And just watching a moose eat. I mean, I don't know if anybody's, you might see it on TV or something, but they're really kind of slobbery, slimy eaters. They just kind of grab a hold of a branch and just kind of slide the leaves through the branch, and all of a sudden they just get this thing taken care of and start chewing away. So it's pretty neat, though. Anyway, but it's just a great atmosphere to be out there to see the not only the moose itself, but to see the other wildlife out there and all the stories that come thereafter. So I just want to encourage people, if you haven't been out moose hunting, yeah, just to go out and just see nature, and even if it's not moose season.
Thanks so much, Al Badgley. Listening to KHNS Talk Around Town. I'm Joanne Ross Cunningham, and in the studio today, our talking topic is the recall that will come up for a vote on the 4th next Tuesday. And we're still squeezing people into this small box we have here. We have today Jim Shook, who's the author of the petition, Deb Vogt, former Assistant Attorney General, and also with voters against the recall, Joanne Waterman and Damon Hoffman, and they're the two people named for the recall. All right. So, Jim, starting with you, were inspired to create the recall. Tell us what that's about and your role in this. I'm going to ask you to get real close to the microphone here.
All right. How's that?
Go for it.
All right. Well, in essence, as simply as I can put it, it was my opinion that the Assembly should not have knowingly violated borough statute by a borough code by not seating someone within 30 days, as is set out by borough code, simply put.
Okay. I have provided for me by Tara Bicknell some sound from the meeting, and let's take a listen to that. What we have is the conclusion of the meeting, in which the decision was made not to appoint at that moment. Okay, that's not coming up right now, but what I will do is read to you, this is from Julie Causey's minutes, and
I would go to the conclusion then of the judge. It says that the Assembly is ordered to call another election for that office pursuant to Haynesboro Code 268545. So, and now we're here to appoint because an election was going to take too long because it conflicted with another part of the borough code. Is that correct?
You have to have 45 days notice for the special election.
Right, and the borough code says that if there's a vacancy, that it must be, it shall be appointed within 30 days.
Right.
Okay, but does the, I'm just asking then, does the judge's direction to have another election under that code, does that, how does that affect the 30-day thing? I mean, if the judge, 30-day thing. I mean, if the judge, 30-day.
30-day thing.
Trying to make your point.
Yeah. There is a second piece of sound that I'm hoping I can bring up, and it's Jerry Lapp's comments on that that evening.
I guess my big issue with the recall is the item by which it was called upon, and after that vote, because if you read the code and you read the charter and you read the judge's order, you have three different directions. So I think there was a little bit of gray there. Of course, we were given opinions by lawyers or whatever. This trumps this. And my own personal feeling was that we had been wronged by a seat, and that seat should have been filled by the next person in line. And I think the judge let us down.
Thank you, Chair.
I support the recall.
Okay, that was Jerry Lapp commenting in Monday night's forum, saying the judge let us down. And what the judge had been referencing was the American rule that says the next highest vote getter is not automatically entitled to be given the vacated office. And that's quoted from Waterman in that meeting. So, Mr. Shook sees it as clearly a violation of borough code. And in fact, the judge that wrote an opinion that came out on the 20th of September said, yes, it was, they were in violation of borough code not to appoint.
That's a borough attorney, not judge.
Sorry, borough attorney. Yeah, okay, Deb Vogt, you have been involved in this. What's your perspective?
Well, I think that the opinion that Mr. Chandler issued on September 20th is pretty well disposes of the issue. He did do a lot of research into the charter committee and so on, and basically in a fairly long and detailed and thorough opinion, now concludes that based on his research and so on, the code provision shall appoint is valid. He did not find what I thought he might find, which was something that said, gee, what if they can't appoint? And the charter committee saying, well, let's put attempt in there. They didn't do that. And so I agree with his conclusion here that the code provision at this point does prevail, but that's as of last week, not as of June, whatever the date was of the meeting.
June 13th.
June 13th. Thanks, Jim.
Okay. So it seems that there...
Why don't we address the first question?
Go ahead.
Reiterate again what Joanne Waterman said that was in the sound piece.
All right. Waterman said in the sound piece?
Joanne's statement, the first sound piece.
All right. In the first sound piece,
you need to be closer to your microphone.
Okay,
I'm getting
thank you.
The signals. All right. In the first sound piece,
she was, I think, pointing to the fact that the judge's conclusion would point to holding a second election. And then Rossman agreed with that thought. Waterman wondered what would happen if the assembly breaks the borough code and doesn't appoint someone to the seat. And then she moved to proceed to a special election to fill the assembly. That motion failed.
Well, first of all, the judge's order in the Superior Court and the filling of the seat within 30 days are apples and oranges. They're two completely separate issues. The judge's order does not preclude filling the seat within 30 days. The judge's order simply states that as a result of his decision, the seat should be filled by a special election. Permanent. Filling of the seat. However, the 30-day rule by our code is a completely different issue. We have to do what the borough code says we have to do.
There was some discussion on that night whether borough code or borough charter takes precedence, and there was a lot of confusion. In the second soundbite that I played, Mr. Lapp underscored that there was a lot of confusion that night, and it wasn't clear what the course was. And so the question that I wanted to ask previously is, in the case when it's not clear what the course is, should there be some, for future case, should there be some kind of amendment to a borough code so that it's clear? I know that Steve Vick said, well, let's throw some names in a hat. You know, that he was trying to find a way out of the deadlock because it obviously was a deadlock. Comments, so we haven't heard from Damon or Joanne yet. Comments on, do you think there could have been a better way out than this election or this recall effort?
I think we came to the best decision we could at that night.
Could we have done things better? Absolutely. I think under the circumstances we performed to the rule of law, you know, in the best interest of the community. I think there's a, you know, the broader issue is that there are inconsistencies and that we need to deal with those. You know, we see them occasionally in the form of housekeeping resolutions and things like that, and that's an attempt, that's an effort to deal with that. Could it have been done better? I think so, but I think we did the best we could with what we had.
I think decisions made by the assembly are a part of what they sign up for when they volunteer to serve for the public. It is my opinion that they don't need the Superior Court, the city attorney, the city clerk, or the city manager to tell them how to make decisions. I believe that the reading of the borough code was, the code is set out very simply. They were not there to seat Norm Smith or Karen Hess, they were there to fill the seat. That was their simple one thing to do. And I don't care if they drew a name from the hat, flipped a coin, or what they did, they should have acted less like ego-driven thinking and more like people that are there to serve the whole community. And I was disappointed in the performance, and I think they could have done better. You know, I know they've admitted they could have done better, but I think they should have sat there until they filled that seat mm-hmm. and gave the people of the borough representation that okay. they should have had.
You're listening to Talk Around Town, and the talking topic is the source of the recall that's on the ballot. This is supposed to be a call-in show, but our phones haven't been working. And so if you would like to make a comment, get on your computer and send an email to news@khns.org. And if you catch up with us in time, we'll read your comments on the talk show, news@khns.org. Is there, you commented to us that they should have made a decision. Deb Vogt, what's your perspective on this? Could they have made a decision given the deadlock? Do they stay after midnight? What's the deal?
Well, obviously they could have made a decision if someone had changed their perspective, and there were two members who wanted one thing quite definitely, and three members who wanted a variety of other things, but not the first thing quite definitely. So somebody would have had to change their position. The mayor could have given some instruction and advice and so on. But I guess the bigger point to me is that the code and the charter are full of inconsistencies like this. I mean, this was a charter and a code that both of them were put together. Yeah, not without a lot of effort, but in a fairly short time frame. And one of the things, for instance, that the attorney discovered was that the charter committee wanted to take the word attempt out of the charter, and they adopted, it was a proposed revision by the community of DCNRA, Community and Regional Affairs. They didn't make that amendment, and the charter that was voted on by the people said attempt, but it points up to me the need for what I would suggest is a code revision commission, something, or a committee that is a standing committee to try to address some of these issues, because they're all over in the planning rules, in the tour permit rules, and all kinds of inconsistencies. And we ought to give our borough assembly a better document to rely on. I guess I think this provision specifically clearly needs attention because it's hung up the assembly several times just since I've been here, and I haven't been there that long. But any, for instance, I think one thing that the code could say that is if there's an actual vacancy, not just somebody not coming to a meeting, but if there's an actual vacancy, then the majority vote disposes of the issue, and you don't have these deadlocks of needing 4 out of 5 people.
Right. I spoke with Julie Causey yesterday, asking her what is a majority, supermajority in seated assembly of 6 is 5 and a 4.
Oh, supermajority.
Supermajority.
Yeah. Is 5.
And then 4 is?
A quorum, a regular majority.
Supermajority.
Yeah. And so then if you have only 5 members, would it make sense to go to a different definition of majority?
Well, in regard to the code as opposed to the charter is the foundation document for the laws of the borough. The code is a living document, one that changes with the needs of the borough government and the people it serves. And as with the U.S. Constitution, we have never changed the words on the U.S. Constitution, but we have made amendments, and we live by the amendments because it changes with the needs of our society. Now, I thought it was a basic premise that people within the assembly would know the difference between those two. The code clearly mandates you shall, and it is my opinion that they should not have not only not complied with the borough code, but maybe not fully realized the gravity of the decision they made in not seating someone. And they had the opportunity to change that in successive meetings. I don't think anybody would have been too upset if it was past 30 days, as long as they did it. Well, of course, a special election was not possible under borough law.
Right, right.
If it was past 30 days, it would be
within the 45 days or the 75 days. The two of those time periods precluded a special.
Yeah, well, okay.
If it was past 30 days, it'd be just as, supposedly illegal as not
exactly.
doing it at all.
Yes.
And so, but you say you think that would have been okay.
Special election was not possible.
Well, I guess I would ask, just putting my no recall button hat on, how you feel about Mr. Lapp and Ms. Hill that evening, what their actions were or were not.
Mr. Lapp and who?
Jan Hill, the mayor.
About their actions?
Yeah.
Well, first of all, these two individuals don't have anything to do with the recall. And that's the subject matter I want to stay on. I don't want to necessarily, attack someone who is not involved in the recall.
Well, I don't think that's fair because...
By the simple fact of the fact that come October 4th, in a few days, they will no longer be on the assembly.
Well, and Jerry Lapp's running.
It's a moot point.
They're both
running.
I'm
disappointed with the performance of the entire assembly on
okay.
that issue.
All right.
So if that will suffice.
I am looking at a postcard that is sent out by Heather Lindy is heading this up. She's the chair of Haynes Voters Against the Recall. And she lists those voting no for the recall are Jerry Lapp, Scott Rossman, Steve Vick, and then some others. But my impression is that Mr. Rossman and Mr. Lapp, as Mr. Lapp has stated, that there was confusion that evening. So the fact that he's voting against the recall is interesting to me.
I studied every word over and over again from the meeting of June 13th.
Mm-hmm.
On my computer, I have it on CD, and I have read it, and I've listened to it over and over and over again, and made copious notes. And I, for the life of me, cannot understand where all of this confusion came from. There was so much time spent on side issues and issues that had no bearing on the point they were there for. They weren't there to seat Karen Hess or Norm Smith, or they were there to fill the seat, period.
And that didn't happen.
How they did it, as long as it was a person qualified to sit on the assembly, they needed to appoint someone, pure and simple.
All right.
Now, it makes sense. It's logical sense. It's ethical sense. It's common sense that Karen Hess would have been the person to choose. But that's not why they were there. They were there to fill the seat, period.
Mm-hmm. What I have been wondering is how can the Borough Assembly avoid such an impasse in the future? You've stated that you would, Mr. Shook, that you think it's obvious that Karen Hess should have been seated. And there are people who don't feel that way, and that's okay.
Of course.
That's okay.
Of course.
So
yes.
how can this impasse be avoided in future times? What I think is that the Borough Assembly members were trapped without a route out. We had three who had a strong opinion one way, two who had a strong opinion another way, and that was an impasse that didn't change. So what's the formula for not getting deadlocked, not dividing the community in this kind of way?
Maybe they should have stayed until Scott Rossman got hungrier.
But I'd like to hear, too, what your answer would be as to how to avoid this in the future, because I've seen the assembly get hung up 3-2 when there was only five members and you need four of them to pass something. I think it's
this is an
a
issue that points up the weakness, certain weaknesses, certain little cracks in the code that perhaps should be patched up.
Exactly.
We found the same thing with the issue of residency.
Exactly.
When Goodman was seated, because there was no way, not the seating part, but there was no way to disqualify him until after the election, which was goofy. And that has been changed since. Okay.
Well,
the fact that he was seated was incorrect and shouldn't have happened. But the fact that he had to be allowed to run should not be. Anyway.
Okay.
So
yeah.
Anyway, that was fixed.
That's
this can
beside
be fixed.
The point. The point that I'm trying to get to is what is a fix or a correction for a borough assembly that has only five members? What's the way out for creating a decision? What's the way out for creating a moment when a person could have been seated on that evening? And
a sense of responsibility to comply with the law. It's very simply put.
Okay. Dep vote?
Well, I think all five members that were there that night had a strong vision of what they thought was best for the community and thought was complying with the law. And I think, as we've seen, we just have a law that's very hard to comply with when there are five people and you need four votes to do something. I think that provision needs amendment. And there are a lot of other provisions in the code that need attention.
I think personal agendas were put before the interest of the borough residents, personally.
There are one, two, three emails that have just come in. And I'll read the first one. This one happens to come from Heather Lindy. Now that it has become clear that there are many inconsistencies with the decision, and since the point of the recall was apparently to insist the vacant seat be filled, and that this election will do that, what would a yes on the recall accomplish except two vacancies to fill? Secondarily, why is the yes on the recall group supporting Jerry Lapp and Mayor Hill, who were both part of that decision, and why aren't they able to gain the lone no vote that night, Steve Vick, in their effort?
First of all, Mr. Lapp and Mr. Rossman are not eligible for recall. Anyone who bothers to read the code knows that. They were within the last 120 days of their term, and therefore ineligible. If they're within the first 120 days of their term, they're ineligible.
Okay.
Mayor Hill doesn't have the authority to do anything, and that was a very bad position for her to be in. She was not happy.
Next question from Bill Kurtz. Having spent about 30 minutes talking about Glenn R. Hamburg, talking with Glenn R. Hamburg at the Community and Regional Affairs, it could be that the Assembly has misunderstood the combination of the court order and borough code. Haynes Borough Code and Title 29 state a vacancy is to be filled within 30 days by appointment. The judge ordered an election as to Borough Code to be held to fill out the term. Those are two different things, so setting a special election at the October general election is fine. First, the Assembly is required to appoint a person to fill seat E till the election. Thank you. Comments?
Well, only that Mr. Kerr should by now understand that Title 29 has nothing to do with the borough on this point. The vacancy filling provision of Title 29 does not apply to the Home Rule borough, the Haynes borough.
All right. Here's, we have three more emails coming in. This one comes from Gershon Cohen. Given the chaos caused by different language coming from the courts, the charter and the code, it is unreasonable to think a group of volunteer officials would be able to sort out the correct legal path at such a heated moment. The borough has often made decisions that could be questioned. Bringing this one issue to a recall is purely a political move. The proof is that the recall supporters are not campaigning against Jan Hill and Jerry Lapp, who were also complicit in the decision that evening. Okay, I think you responded to that sentiment earlier, Mr. Shook. Yes. Okay, here's from Joe Poor. Sounds like the panel is overweighted in favor of vote against the recall. However, Damon mentioned that they did the best they could on filling the seat with the information they had. However, Roger Maynard, on numerous occasions in front of our assembly, encouraged them to revisit the issue, but the issue was never readdressed. Why? They have had months to correct the issue and avoid the recall effort, but they chose to ignore the issue and continue in violation of the court's order. So let's ask that question. Why did the borough assembly not revisit this? And let's ask the assembly members who are sitting here rather quietly.
I would like to go back for a moment.
Would you mind honoring?
Sure.
You want to take it?
No, go ahead.
I would like to go back for a moment for the fact that Julie
Damon
Conte
was going to speak, and then you'll have a chance.
Oh, I wasn't just looking.
Sorry. Well, yes, I guess I would say that we probably could have revisited it, and I would be willing to bet that we would have come to the same conclusion.
Okay, Mr. Shook.
I was just going to say that Julie Causey did a great job in dispelling any of the confusion in regard to the statutory aspects that absolutely applied to that moment. You know, she was very clear in delineating the difference between the charter and the code. And the judges, you know, the American rule, and as opposed to the British rule, all of these things that were brought up were not on point whatsoever. They just didn't apply, and they were side issues that should not have been even addressed.
Well, I guess that's obviously your opinion, and I think what this whole conversation points up is that it was not crystal clear that evening by any means what folks ought to do, and I think Mr. Hoffman's position, or somebody's comment, that if we do vote in favor of the recall, I guess it was Heather, in favor of the recall, we'll just be left with two vacancies and only four people to appoint, and boy, I don't want to look at that one.
Here's another email. Comes from Rob Goldberg. Four assembly members voted the same way. Two are being targeted for recall. I am quite sure that if Jerry Lapp and Scott Rossman were eligible, there would be no recall. This recall attempt is bad for the community. It is divisive and only stirs up hostility between people. We have to move beyond an us versus them mentality. We will only prosper when we learn to work together to solve problems. And that's what I was kind of trying to get at with how, what would be a route out of this? What kind of amendment needs to come so that we don't end up with an impasse, so that you can move beyond the impasse?
Well, one thing
specifics
we could do with a modification is to maybe give a little more authority to whoever the mayor happens to be at the time. Maybe the mayor can be the person to nudge one way or the other.
Well, certainly the mayor right now always has the power to advise and to bang
advise
the gavel
perhaps,
and keep them there and, yeah, and just insist that they come to a decision. And that's what I think some other mayors that I have known in the past
good suggestion
might have done. But
Joanne signaled that she's ready to comment here. Thank you, Joanne.
Well, I do think, I don't wish for this to happen to any future assembly members. I think it's a no-win situation. I do think the code needs to be looked at, and I think there's lots of options out there, and those need to be worked on. And I think they will be worked on. I can only say that I am, in the 2 years I've been seated on the assembly, I've come to respect all my fellow assembly members, and I trust, when I asked if Jerry and Scott could come to any other decision as far as seating someone, and they said no, I trusted their answer. And that's when we brought forth the election option. And now it comes down to who do I trust now? And I trust the voters. I think in any decision that has come at this point in situations like this, I'm going to stand by and always trust the voters and what the majority of the voters want. And I think that's what I will do, and that's what I will respect in the long run, is what the majority of the voters want.
Good. Another email here. This comes from Cindy Buxton. If one or two of the council members are recalled, how will the positions be filled? Well, we kind of went over that. That would be by appointment. In my opinion, if the remnant assembly appoints 1 to 2 members till next year, it's very likely that the resulting assembly would be less representative. We're coming short on time here. I would like to ask each of you for a very quick summary of your perspective and your encouragement, not only you know, about this recall, but in terms of your hope for the community working together. Starting with Damon and Mr. Shook, and then Joanne and then Deb Vogt.
Put me on the spot here. Well, I think I understand the intent of the recall effort, and if it is truly about the rule of law, then I agree with it. After hearing what Mr. Shook has to say, I believe him. I think that it's changed a little over time. I think maybe the message has changed, and it's starting to get more political, and I don't think that's a good thing. I think we should all be accountable for our actions, and that's why we voted to put it on the ballot. You know, I guess we could have voted to not do that, but I believe in accountability.
All right.
So,
fair
enough. I guess we need to move on.
We're crowding the next segment of the program, so
I'll make
quickly
it very short.
A last comment.
I think Steve Vick was the one person who really appreciated the gravity of the moment. You know, he would not go along with this. And I think that the law is not something that you abide by when it's convenient and don't when it's not convenient.
Okay.
And I don't think our lawmakers need to be in that position.
All right, Joanne Waterman.
I agree with Jim. I don't think the lawmakers need to be in that position. And again, I go back to the, and I think what everybody has said, this is an obvious flaw in the code, and that it will be worked on. As to this coming Tuesday, I encourage everybody to get out and vote, not only because of the recall, but because in the United States, we're very fortunate to live where we live and be able to vote, and I don't think that should be shirked.
Last comment, Deb Vogt.
Thanks. I think that what everyone else has said pretty well sums it up. I think it was just a very difficult decision for those folks that evening. They did the best that they could, and a recall over that is really not appropriate.
And I would say that all of you, all five of us being crammed in this little studio, it's also a very difficult position. And I thank you for your civility and your willingness to come here and try to air what will be voted on this coming Tuesday. And also look forward to the possibility of mending code or whatever it'll take so that we don't put our elected officials in this position again of being scrutinized for something that all the assembly members were involved in. So thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks,
Jim. Thanks.
Talk Around Town. I'm Joanne Ross Cunningham, and in the studio with us is Greg Higgins. You were in Africa not so long ago, and here you are. Tell us what you're up to these days.
Good morning, Joanne. Well, I've been living in Moshi, Tanzania for about a year and a half. I went over there originally with the Haynes Venture Scouts 3.5 years ago and kind of struck a note with me, and I went back a year and a half ago, and I've been living there pretty much full-time since then. And what I do there is I have an orphanage with 38 children, a preschool that I help out that has over 300 children, and I do clinics for a group called Project Helping Hands in Portland, Oregon. They send teams to East Africa, and I join them and I work with them.
What appealed to you? You went there, you said it struck a note. What was that about?
Well, I've been doing clinics in East Africa with PHH, Project Helping Hands, for about 2.5 years before that. And I was looking for something that was a little more sustainable. The problem with clinics is you do a clinic and then you come back in 6 months, not much has changed. So I was looking for a circumstance in Africa where primarily what I was looking for was something that was started by somebody local that I could augment so that if I wasn't there, it would continue.
Mm-hmm. And it's continuing?
And it is continuing very well, indeed.
What kind of staff is there?
Pardon?
What kind of staff is there to help continue this?
Oh, well, I'll go back to the history of how the orphanage started. When we were there with the Venture Scouts, our guide on the mountain, a fellow by the name of Edward Lazaro, everybody calls him Teacher, he had started a preschool, and I liked the preschool, but the preschool had a similar problem with my clinics, and that is you take care of the children in the daytime, you send them home, and they come back the next day, and you got to undo all the bad things that happened at home, that sort of thing. So that wasn't too attractive to me. I came back to Africa to meet with Teacher about 6 months after we were here because I promised him I would do a malaria abatement program for the community. So I went back and we did a mosquito net program in a clinic. And then he had started the orphanage by that time. And I went, spent some time there, and I realized this is exactly what I was looking for.
Exactly what you're looking for. You love those kids.
Yeah, great kids. We got some great kids.
Uh-huh. Is there, I understand there's a hope that maybe someday you'll have some exchange students come to Haynes?
We're definitely thinking about it because most of my kids right now are in the lower grade school age, kindergarten to second grade, but I have a smattering of older children. So our long-term plans is to expand and build a permanent facility south of town from where we're at now. We already own land for that. But that's a 3 to 5 year project. So we're looking down the line, and I'd love to get some of those kids to other countries to just for the experience, and it would just be wonderful.
Wonderful, broadening, and a great cultural learning experience both ways.
Exactly.
Yeah. My hiking buddy is Deb Kemp, and I know that she's on your board.
Correct.
She tells me that you were recently on a mission to buy gifts for the kids. You were getting them watches?
Oh, that was, I came back in the spring. I came back and we had our annual board meeting, and the kids are fascinated by watches, and it's something that's well beyond their capacity to actually ever own. But here, you can go to a place like one of these big chain stores, and you can buy a nice watch for $9. So I went back with watches for all of the kids. They loved it.
Mm-hmm, great. We have about a minute left. You know that the kids in the Haynes School are collecting pennies for peace, mm-hmm. for the mission, mm-hmm. or for the orphanage, and also that the high school students again this year hope to give some money to the orphanage. So there's a rich connection between Haynes and this orphanage that you've helped bridge.
Absolutely. Yeah, it just continued from the time we left with the Venture Scouts. Most of those kids stayed connected, and some of them have been amazing. I mean, we've got substantial donations from some of the kids in high school.
That's great. That's great. Jamie went and helped get some hot water for the orphanage, and he showed slides recently to all the student body. Things are progressing.
Yes. Yeah. Jamie was wonderful. It was really good having Jamie there. In fact, actually, I was sick when he came, so he kind of ran the show for a week.
That's great. Dr. Greg Higgins here in the studio, and he'll be in town for a few more days, I understand. Thank you so much for what you're doing. Up next is the World Cafe with David Dye. Well, you're listening to KHNS, Haynes, Skagway, and Klekwan.